Yeah, let's go there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's go there.
Tell me about this night in Hue.
Fairy. This happened yesterday.
I couldn't get out if I wanted to.
I found nothing.
Don't do this. Don't do this, brother.
Hello, and welcome to Yeah, Let's Go There. I'm J. Russell Mickelson, and today we're going to the Middle East with...
Jazan Katanya Tahireh Janssen.
But she goes by just...
Katanya.
Since she was about...
Always.
All right then. Katanya's going to tell us a story about a place I've never been to before, and a people I knew little to nothing about. So, where to begin?
Okay, so I was in Israel... And,
don't start there. Let's start in Jordan.
I went to Jordan. There I was. I was in Jordan. I got on this bus. We went from the border. We went to Petra.
But tell me about the tour. Did you, like, find it on the internet? How did you find
it? My aunt and uncle had been with the same company.
Oh.
And they recommended this company
for
going
to... It was, like, pre-internet days.
No, it was 2008.
Okay.
Which would put Katanya's age at the time at about...
37.
No, 36. 35, 36, something like that. I went to Jordan to see Petra. And being ignorant...
The town of Petra, not your friend Petra.
Don't,
that throws me off every
you
time.
You need to not put that on because it makes you sound really...
Petra
is one of the seven wonders of the world, mate.
Okay.
It's a city built into vertical canyons. It's got these entire sides of mountains that have like buildings carved into them, intricate buildings with pillars and rooms and multiple corridors. And
Petra is stunning. You should visit it. About this tour.
So off I go. I went with this group of various travelers.
But you just met them at the bus. These aren't people you knew already.
No, I didn't know anybody. I was on my own. So we go to Petra and we see Petra and it's amazing and there's amazingness. One of the things I learned about Petra is that the Bedouins that live there selling trinkets to the tourists had not very long before been living in the caves themselves. But then the...
What's not very long? Like within a few decades or within a few years?
Within probably... Less than two decades.
Bedouins are native to Jordan? No, they're nomadic.
They're nomadic. But these people obviously weren't that nomadic if they were living in caves. But
yeah.
they're around the Sinai, they're around Jordan, and mm-hmm. they're desert people.
Yeah, so what do they look like?
They look like people.
Okay.
Bedouins are the original Arabs. They're the first people referred to as Arabs. Now, any group that speaks Arabic is known as Arab, but that's not important right now. Bedouins have... typically light brown skin, dark features. The men often wear these massive sort of red checkered headscarves to shield the sun and keep themselves cool. And they are semi-nomadic. They travel for part of the year, but they have a home base, such as a cave or a tent, that they return to farm and cultivate the land. The Bedouins in Petra are Banu Bedouins, and it's in Katanya's tour of these people and their way of life that our story takes place.
Go on.
So, Petra.
On the first day, Katanya's tour went around Petra and ended up at a restaurant in the evening.
And I wasn't really into it.
So she returns to the tour bus.
And I tried to get into the bus because I wanted something.
But it was locked.
And some other bus driver notices me and comes over and says, "Oh, how are you? Good to see you," and shakes my hand. And of course, I shook it back. And he immediately pulled me into like a half bear hug and was really enthusiastic and was shouting to his friends something in Arabic and holding me a little bit too close and a little bit tightly and enthusiastically. And it was very much the way that a Western man, a Western drunk man, would handle a woman. Even very close friends that respect me, if they're drunk, would do that. They would hug you too hard, or so it was like that. He was being far too enthusiastic, and I was really uncomfortable. But I didn't like it. But I didn't know how to extricate myself from it. Later on, when I was in Egypt, I learned quite a lot more about how to handle men in Arab countries. One of the things you shouldn't do with men is you shouldn't shake their hand. You should instead put your arm over your shoulder and say in Arabic, "Please respect my honor." But I didn't know that. So basically, as soon as I shook hands with anyone, I was instantly marked a loose woman.
So Katanya's being mauled by this strange bus driver, and she...
kind of sort of politely trying to disengage his hand from my shoulder and peel away and smiling embarrassedly and then getting away eventually and be kind of like, I'm just going to stand over here.
And she waits by herself until the rest of the group returns. When they do return, the tour leader announces,
"Who's going to go to the Bedouin camp to spend the night, and who's not? I'd signed up for the overnight trip to the Bedouin camp, so I went off with these three other people."
So Catania would travel for 2 days with
this Jordanian guide, who was really much more engaging than the previous bus driver had been. He only had three of us. It was a small group. We had a really nice car. It was quite posh, I guess. And he was really proud of Jordan and talked a lot about the king, which Jordanians love. And there was an American man from IBM whose job was investment.
And there was another American man who was a photographer.
And an Israeli woman. So this woman was a Sephardic Jew. I had to look up the difference between Sephardic and Ashkenazi. I always mix them up. She was Sephardic, which are the darker ones, the Middle Eastern ones, who have dark olive skin and beautiful dark hair. And they're quite attractive.
So the five of them set off together in the tour guide's jeep.
And it was cool. It was fun. And we went off to this Bedouin camp. And in the Bedouin camp, we each had our own tent. And I felt totally safe. It was in the desert. It was beautiful.
And they spend the whole first day at a Bedouin camp, and they love it. They get to meet many Bedouins and learn all about their culture and their lives. And it's like nothing they've ever experienced before. The second day of their tour, they get in their jeep.
We're bounding across the desert, crushing plants. And we came to this watering hole. And there was a number of tents, open wall tents. And this was, I guess, one of our stops.
So they enter one of the tents, and there's a table and tea and
some boy with a lute or some instrument. It's quite lovely and very relaxing. And all of a sudden, from somewhere was produced this lovely traditional Bedouin outfit that was like this facial covering that covered everything except your eyes and had this little thing that went to the nose. And it was beautiful. The photographer, the American, her friend, who was an internet friend who had come over to meet her, was taking pictures, and he was quite enthusiastic about this.
The guide then produces some coal and said,
and was like, "Oh, no, I can make it better." And he started putting coal on her eyes to make her look even more, in my eyes, exotic and beautiful. And he was getting really into it and really enthusiastic and getting it just right and holding the veil up and, you know, decorating her. And he was really into it. Too into it, I thought. So when this man was being really effeminate and getting enthusiastic about these women's clothing and women's makeup, I said, "Are you sure you're not gay?" Because I thought that was an appropriate joke. Mm-hmm. However, in this man's context, it was not appropriate. And as soon as the words came out of my mouth, his arm stopped moving with whatever piece of lingerie he was holding, and he spun around and grabbed me by the throat and had me down on my back and was straddling over top of me before I even knew what had happened. Everything froze, everybody froze. The other three people in my party stopped. I swear any music that was being played on this little loop stopped. And I froze, and the man attacking me froze. And I remember being there on the ground, stunned, and with this man's hand around my throat and straddling me, and he said quite clearly and quite quickly, "I will show you that I am not gay. I will show you that I am not gay." And I remember sort of seeing over his shoulder this other American man, this investor guy, completely frozen and still. I think he was sort of halfway standing up or something. Everybody was completely paralyzed with shock. I didn't even get to the point of not knowing what to do because I was still frozen.
Eventually, the tour guide
relaxed the pressure a little bit on my throat and looked around a little bit uncertainly and then backed off a bit and said, pointing a finger at me, "There are no gay Bedouins."
The tour guide steps away from Catania. The others in the group settle into their spots around the tent in an awkward silence, while Catania finds a seat for herself.
We sat there for I don't know how long, and at some point I was vaguely aware of this little lute boy who was probably 7 or 8 years old sitting on the guide's lap. And at some point, the guide got up and strode towards the car and turned on the engine and moved it a little wee bit. And so we sort of got up and followed him because we were in the desert in a camel watering stall in the Wadi Musa in Jordan. So we got in the car, and the guide wouldn't speak. And he took his scarf that he'd always been wearing, and from then on, he wrapped it around his head and his face so that only his eyes showed in this really menacing way. Before, he'd been very accommodating and very enthusiastic to tell us about his country and do his job as a guide. But now he was very much an ominous, controlling, dominating, quite frightening person. And nobody spoke. And he bounced over the desert really fast in this SUV. And at some point, he pulled up on this rock that was really steep and stopped. He got out and just walked away, so we sort of sat there for a moment, and we had to sort of clamber out. He had strode up and started unloading stuff to make a lunch. He just started cooking. He still wasn't speaking, and eventually he spread a cloth out, and we went and sat there like the sheep that we were. Nobody knew what to do. And he started serving us this food, and one of the American men said something. I don't know if we should eat it. I'm actually scared of getting poisoned. And he wasn't serious. It was like a joke, but it reflected our palatable fear. And then later, we packed up, and none of us died from eating this food that he made, and we got back into the car, and he's roared off again, and we passed this big pile of rubble, and you could see it had been some kind of something before, a little shack or something, and he announced... This is the first time he'd really spoken. He announced that that was Lawrence of Arabia's house. Lawrence of Arabia, he was gay. All the Bedouins had him. All of them had him. They all had Lawrence. He was gay. There are no gay Bedouins, though. But they all had Lawrence of Arabia.
No one responded to him. There was a general silence among Catania and the other travelers at this point. Next, he took them
to this big sand dune and just stopped the car and
told them to get out.
And we got out and walked up this amazing sand dune that was really beautiful. It was getting to be sunset, and I kind of felt really uncomfortable and apologized to them.
The other travelers in her group.
For this situation I seem to have brought on, and nobody really said much.
And they turn around to leave, and the Jeep is gone.
And then we thought, well, we should go down and try to find where the car is, because we couldn't see him. We walked for a bit, and we eventually came around the corner of this rock thing, and he was there in the car. He hadn't really left.
After that, the guide drove them back to rejoin the original tour group. He dropped them off, went on his way, and never bothered the four of them again. That's where our story ends, but Catania and I continued to discuss the behavior of the tour guide for some time. The change that occurs after she made a joke about his sexuality and he attacked her is so odd and so sudden. It made me want to know why. Why did he react so strongly? Why did he attack Catania? Why did it matter whether Lawrence of Arabia was gay or not? Why does it matter whether any Bedouin is gay or not? Well, we don't know, and we can't know. But I thought I would share one of my, and more importantly, Catania's thoughts on that from our conversation after the story finished.
Have you considered, I wonder if his reaction with the scarf and the driving away, is it possible that he did it out of shame, that he felt ashamed, so he hid his face because he was embarrassed, and he drove away because he couldn't face you guys and wanted to be alone? And
no, I really think it was a control thing. It was a power game.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't ashamed. It was just weird because the main thing that was noticeable was how he had changed the power structure afterwards. There was this very menacing and very kind of ominous and frightening persona he had changed himself into. Through body language, through the way he communicated, through changing his headscarf, and through aggressive silence. Although, I'm sure maybe anybody that reacts that strongly to being called gay probably is, but I really think that it was a aggressive stereotype he was playing. He changed the role that he was in.
To Catania for sharing this story. We met while I was in Taiwan. Katanya's Canadian, but she's been living in Taipei for the last 10 years. For the intro music, we heard Penguin's Harmonica Hop. Check out Penguin's latest project, Pogway, on Pogway.com. That's spelled P-A-U-G-W-E. The rest of the soundtrack in today's episode was by Birdmask, a track called Reverie in Green. This is the third time we've used Birdmask on the show. If you haven't done so already, go to our website, yeahletsgothere.com, where yeah is spelled Y-E-A-H. There you'll find a breakdown of every episode of Yeah, Let's Go There, and links to every artist in each episode. You can also listen to or download every episode of the show, or subscribe on iTunes. Go to the website, click on Birdmask, take a look at his music. He's a Swiss artist making music out of New York, and he is severely talented. Check him out. And if you're looking for me, J. Russell Mickelson, you can find me on Twitter at J.R. Mickelson, and you can find me on Facebook as J. Russell Mickelson. That's Russell with two S's and two L's. Mickelson is a little more complicated. It's spelled M like Mary, I-K-K-E-L-S-E-N. But really, go look up Birdmask. It'll be worth your time. Yeah, let's go there. I'm going there. You should come too. A new episode every Monday.